The brand that has declined the most in the world over the last year, apparently, is not Tesla, but Starbucks.
Do you define brand by the number of users rather than by the people who regard the product as authentic?
Mark, good morning. How are you?
Well, you know, I've just returned from quite a stay in Cape Town, work and play, to Johannesburg. And I don't know, when you arrive in Johannesburg, you're suddenly in work mode, you know. And I mean, that's not right, is it, Tim? I mean, although you've managed to sort of, you know, blur the difference, right? I mean, is it right that geography affects your mood? Is it, Tim? Anyway, good morning, everybody.
There's so many things that sort of trigger work mode. I mean, it is interesting. I see that now JP Morgan is demanding that everybody goes back to work. And I have to say, as somebody who works from a place called downstairs, yeah. This does not fill me with a lot of joy. I live in fear that somebody will say to me, Tim, you know, we actually quite like to see you in the office every now and then.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's horses for courses a bit, you know. I mean, if I was still in the merchant banking business, where at one point I ran a big treasury operation with the hundreds of dealers and things in it, I'd want them in the office because I'd want to see what they, you know, you read the room. Meetings, live meetings with people are more effective than sort of virtual meetings. So I think there's a proper blend. But I generally support that people who are taking corporate risk should be visible to one another and should be able to check each other out. So I sort of support the get back to work thing.
Oh, really?
And yeah. I think these journalists have always had it too damn easy. That's what I think. You guys have got away with sort of funny working out for long enough. We want you 8 to 5, Tim. That's what we want, man. Like the rest of us.
Poor folks. All right. No, yeah. Mark, I'll tell you what, I'll do you a deal. When we get paid as much as your dealers got paid in the treasury department.
Yeah, then you'll come to the office. Exactly. Can't afford the bus fare now, man. Come on, do me a favor.
Anyway, okay, well, talking about the airport, did you bump into Mr. Rasool on the way back?
No, but actually as I was leaving Cape Town, there were people queuing up to greet him. My flight left just before he's landed, methinks.
Okay.
It's a serious issue in this sense for me. It goes to your mandate, and I think your mandate as a diplomat is different from your actions as a politician, if I might say so. So you are sent off to a particular country and you have a mandate, presumably somewhere, which is to build and encourage bilateral trade and other relationships with these countries. And I think that might restrict how you can air your personal political suasion, particularly when we are ruled by a government of national unity. So you should be cautious that you stick to your position and execute your mandate. We have this situation in South Africa where, you know, politicians get appointed to do things instead of to make things happen. Now, I want to distinguish between those two things. So you go like, okay, it's your job to make sure that investment flows into South Africa. It's your job to make sure that, you know, that the railway system works. It doesn't mean you have to do it. It means you have to appoint and orchestrate and manage and create ecosystems that get it done. I don't know if that point is coming through clearly to you, but
no, it's true. I mean, I think it's generally accepted that Rasool overstepped the mark, and that's why he's been given a kind of hero's welcome, is because, you know, he sort of took on the might of the, you know, sort of like, we fight back, there's a fight back campaign going on here. But, you know, it doesn't obviate a whole bunch of problems, underlying problems, one of which is that, as you say, that his job is theoretically a facilitator. But, you know, behind that sits this long history in South Africa of appointing duff politicians, you know, to diplomatic roles. And then, you know, you get them out of the country. It's so great. You know, it's sort of like, what should we do with blah, blah, blah? Oh, I tell you what, let's send him to Romania and then he can ruminate there, or she, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a problem. And if you are appointed as a politician, then, you know, it's very difficult for you to move out of politician mode. You know, in some senses, I'm sympathetic, you know, because you spend your life making political points and making political statements. And then all of a sudden, you're required to say, well, I just sort of feel that we must have tea. You know, it's hard.
You don't get appointed as a politician. You get voted in as a politician. There's a big difference, okay? That politician job
right
then puts you in a position where you can appoint someone to do the job. So once you become the minister of finance or the minister of, you know, health, that position is different from your persona and from your political affiliation. You then have a role, a mandate, a function to perform within the context of all South Africans, whether or not they are your party or not. And so that's the bridge that has been difficult for politicians or freedom fighters or ever wished to cross, is to maintain, if you like, their political persuasions, but appoint professionals to do the job. And when you make an appointment, it goes to their appropriateness for the job, their skill set, all of those kind of things, not their popularity. I've said this 100 times, you cannot become a dentist by the popular vote. You can't.
No. Just thinking about this a little bit more, it actually goes further because, you know, I listened to some of the Department of Foreign Affairs people talk about this, you know, about the whole kind of fandango.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I thought they completely overstepped the mark, you know, because they are civil servants.
Yeah.
And, you know, so because South Africa has appointed a whole bunch of politicians as senior civil servants, not only do the politicians have trouble being diplomats, the senior civil servants have trouble being senior civil servants.
Yeah.
Because they sound like politicians. You know, they just sound exactly like a politician. I mean, like, there's no ethic in South Africa that a civil servant has a responsibility to, you know, the population as a whole rather than to the political party. They are party political people first, it seems to me, too often. Maybe that's not true, but anyway.
Yeah, but until we cross that bridge, we'll see the fruits of its absence of wisdom, I'll be kind, okay? And we're seeing it by the collapse of all sorts of things around us because we've got politicians morphing into business people, morphing into construction experts, morphing into people who understand the export economics of citrus fruit and so on and so on. But necessity, I think and I hope, is driving us towards that intersection. I read recently that Development Bank of South Africa under Minister Creedy is going to now house, house the funding of ports, in particular the funding of rail infrastructure, in an entity into which private sector players can invest. Now, if that means that citrus producers can co-invest in ports so that their citrus can get, you know, exported efficiently and cost effectively, then it's good. If that is a government initiative to control the economics of citrus exports, then it's fundamentally flawed. So I hope it's going the right way. But it's only come about out of necessity. And I would argue that these things could come about as a result of foresight instead of necessity. And that cuts across our entire economy.
Yeah. Can I ask a sort of kind of related question?
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in brands. Everybody's interested in brands. Everybody knows a brand. People know what brands are.
Yeah.
And sort of talk about them in a loose way. What do you think South Africa's brand is at the moment internationally?
SA Inc.
Do you think South Africa has a good brand or South Africa as a... It's kind of hard.
2 points on brands and then ask you. First of all, a brand entitled you to charge a premium. Okay, that's its purpose in life, because you have manifestly proven that your car is more reliable or your glass doesn't crack or whatever it is. And so you can charge a premium. So it is worth creating a brand, first point. Second point, in a company in which I have a significant interest called Easy Equities, we found that retail investors bought shares in brands that they trusted and places where they shop. Right. And there's a huge intersection between those two things. To go back to South Africa, I think we are quite judgmental of ourselves. You know, we don't compare ourselves enough. So, I mean, SA, I think, has got a reasonably confused but potentially very good brand. I mean, if you start looking at the brand damage that's being done in Europe and other places all over the world as a result of conflicts, be they from migration or wars or, you know, inappropriate economic competition or otherwise, South Africa could still be a very interesting mix.
Yes.
But I think underneath the brand, as we think about it, is a lot of stuff that could damage it if not fixed. I don't know. That was too long an answer. I think he just wanted me to say yes or no. I don't know, Tim, man. Come on, man. I don't know. Okay. You know, stop it. Yeah. What do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things about brands is that they're very fragile.
I are.
So, you know, what worries me about all of these attacks from Trump, even though they kind of misguided and they're a bit stupid and, you know, they sort of don't get to the point and they're very, you know, sort of geared towards internal politics in the States. And it's all kind of very unfair.
Yeah.
It does worry me that they are kind of really hurting South Africa's brand. As often, you know, false claims do. You know, I was thinking about Tesla. You know, Tesla's share price is halved, right? And all of that is because of Tesla is associated with Elon Musk. Elon Musk has turned into a kind of government money saver.
Mr. Doge. Doggy.
Yeah, Mr. Doge. And that everybody hates that. And because he's so associated with the brand has lost, you know, there's other reasons as well, of course. But, you know, if you're not effective in countering false statements about your brand, you know, you're slightly in trouble. And I just wonder whether South Africa's really addressed that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you have to agree with the people who are making the kind of negative statements about your brand. You just got to have a thought out strategy for how you deal with it that sort of meets it on its own basis.
You mentioned it being driven by internal politics in the US. It's actually even worse than that. It's driven by an individual, it seems to me, in the US. And those politicians, and it seems to me all politicians, suffer from this similar affliction that they presume upon themselves to make political statements and do political things without due consultation to their economic and other effects, because it's most their right. They're now the boss, you know. And so, you know, I was looking at my alma mater, UCT, and the amount of funding that's going to be cut and is being cut from UCT. It is potentially devastating for that educational institute. Not that I hold a flag for them, but I mean, I think generally speaking, all the research projects, all of these, if you want to call them first world initiatives, are being funded by first world countries. Okay. And so as that starts to disappear or dissipate, we find ourselves less and less included in the world economic debate and dynamics. And that will take years to manifest. Its damage will take years to manifest as we become excluded from, you know, be it financial or academic or, you know, whatever aid, health, whatever it might be. We start closing the circle that defines us. And that's the real damage that will happen. And it is really, it's real. It's big.
Just to move on to the corporate side of it, which I also think is sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
There are organizations that put out these brand reports.
Yeah.
I don't know how accurate they are. But And, you know, sometimes it just strikes me as very obvious, you know. So the biggest brand in the world is Apple, you know, followed by Microsoft, Google, Amazon, blah, 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 blah. But what's interesting is the biggest movers. Oddly enough, the brand that has declined the most in the world over the last year, apparently, is not Tesla, but Starbucks. It's kind of interesting.
Mm.
And the third biggest loser is Mercedes-Benz, which, you know, is, I don't really understand that. But anyway, I don't know how they get to these numbers, but it is difficult. But
I think it's at least part to do with the methodology and part to do with changes in technology. And this is why I say that. I think, you know, do you define brand by the number of users rather than by the people who regard the product as authentic? You know, so I would argue that, you know, when there's emerging other vehicles which dilute, no, Mercedes-Benz users, if you like. I mean, is that the measure of brand or is it satisfied? So first of all, I don't know the methodology. Second of all, it seems to me online, take Starbucks, which is a physical presence, okay, or predominantly have given up market share to online. You know,
yes, so maybe
is it a fundamental shift away from how we participate in the economy rather than a shift between brands? I don't know.
I mean, it is interesting that a huge number of the very successful international brands are American.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there's some Chinese brands that are sort of coming up there. TikTok, obviously, according to this list, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that there's only one brand in the top 50 that isn't from Japan, the US, Germany, or China. And that's some brand from France called Channel. Is that like a river? I mean, what do you do with What's channel?
I don't know. Isn't it a TV station or a media house or something? Channel something. I don't.
I mean, there's got to be channel, the sports channel or something.
Yeah, no, I
Chanel, obviously.
Yeah, I wasn't going to fall for it. You know, help yourself. Okay. Well, I did fall for it. Okay. So yeah, I think we have to redefine brand. Brand is brand rather bluntly measured by the number of users?
Right.
Or is brand a mixture of quality and perception and price per unit volume? For example, take Chanel. You know, take Chanel as a perfume in its distilled sense, so to speak.
Right.
And if you compare that to all of the perfumes available, I imagine that the cost per fluid ounce of Chanel is like the highest. Okay. And there's a reason for that. And even if fewer and fewer people use it because they can't afford it, doesn't mean to say it's not the best brand. Is the point I'm awkwardly trying to make here. Yeah.
That'd be a very interesting sort of test, is what is the margin of the business?
Yeah, what are people prepared to pay for the difference? What is it the brand worth in the substance that you, or the
correct
item that you're selling? So you get a Bic pen. Bic is a fabulous brand, okay? But it doesn't come anywhere near Mont Blanc in terms of quality. Now, I bet they sell millions more Bic pens than they do Mont Blanc pens. Which is the better brand?
Yeah. Well, you could say one of their sales is a proportion of their profitability or something.
Well, that's what I'm testing. I don't know.
That might be
how
a way
to measure these things properly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good idea. I like the idea. And it's interesting to me that something called the State Grid Corporation of China has got the 10th most valuable brand in the world. And I just wonder how that would compare with Eskom. I mean, I'm just surprised that we don't see Eskom up here.
Eskom's got a, well, that's the next test. Is your brand right up there because it's popular or unpopular? Okay, I mean, you could have as many yes, hits on a popular, unpopular exactly. brand. I don't know. But the fact that you know this about the state energy, whatever it is in China,
right,
goes back to our beginning of our discussion this morning, which is I think you need to come into the office more, Tim. You know, you've got too much time on your hands, okay, in your downstairs office, okay. Tim, are they gonna finalize the budget? Eh? Are they? Or are these other, what I might describe as fringe but becoming mainstream allegiances and alliances starting to play a game? I mean, are we starting to have the ANC, EFF, MKP, all coming together as a protest against the DA under cover of a VAT debate? Or are we going to get a budget? I mean, we still haven't got a budget, eh?
I don't know. I mean, I think they are, because some of the, if they just get a couple of the smaller parties to vote for it, they'll be okay. And just by the way, I mean, in Carter's been against the VAT increase, but I think at a push, they might convince them to, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, I have no special insight here, but I think the budget will go through. I think that without the EFF or MK support, because, you know, how can you be in favor of a VAT increase? You know what I mean? As a politician, it's just like, they will have to put something really quite serious on the table. The ANC will have to put something really quite serious on the table in order to get their vote.
My suspicious mind says it's got little to do with the budget. And a lot to do with the cover that the budget might provide for a political realignment, and so that would be a worry to me. I read somewhere that South Africa came last in all of the countries for a regulatory ease of doing business. That was in a Daily Investor report. We came stone last. And, that's a mixed bag, isn't it? Why is it difficult to do business here? Is it because we have a civil service that is slow, or are rules awkwardly out of line with standard practice in the world, or, you know, are we just difficult? It's not an encouraging thing, because I can tell you that, as we said last week, there are only two sources of capital for our growth, and that is foreign direct investment and, you know, private sector. And if we start making those things difficult to connect, we start cutting off a supply of capital, which is, I would argue, lifeline, essential to us.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, also, just looping around to the beginning of the conversation, it's as you say, it's sort of like There's too many politicians who consider their job to actually do things rather than to facilitate other people doing things.
That's
a big kind of mentality change. I mean, I like doing things. I mean, I do things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very satisfying to do something. It's quite difficult, actually, to facilitate other people doing things. You know, it takes a special kind of person. And not me, you know, just by the way.
Yeah, but if you own the hospital,
right,
doesn't mean you can perform open heart surgery. Okay.
I don't know. How difficult is it? You can learn that stuff.
It's like electricity. Connect the red one to the blue one, and there you go.
Yes, you're the black one to the orange one. All righty, Mark. Well, let's get on with our week.
The week is upon us. Yeah. Have a good one, people.
Thanks for listening, everyone.